few things from the towards the middle and end of the Sedra. We usually start at the beginning, and we never get past that. So this year we'll start something in the middle of the first Sedra. It's two Sedras, so I have to do something from it. Torah says that Kikarov Elecha Hadover Ma'od Beficha Uvilvavcha La'asoso. Either it's talking about all the mitzvahs, according to one opinion. It's talking about the mitzvah of Torah learning, according to Rashi. According to the Ramban, some other mitzvah of tshuva. Whatever it is, the Torah says that all the mitzvahs have three parts to it. Torah learning also has three parts, and tshuva has three parts. One is with your mouth, the verbal part. The other is in your heart, the thought part. And doing is the action part. Many mitzvahs have the action and the kavana, what you have in your mind when you do the action. And there's also a verbal part to many, many mitzvahs also, especially rabbinically, to make a bracha. So the bracha involves your speech, and the kavana of your heart involves the intention, and the action is the action. Okay. Tshuva has also. You have to, in your heart, regret what you did wrong, and accept in your heart that you won't do it again. And you have to say vidui, you have to verbally confess the sin, and you have to do it. You have to do what you committed yourself to. So we have the three areas. The only problem is that if I were to ask you to put those three things into an order, you would not put it in the order the Torah gave. The order either would be thought, speech, action, going from the less physical to the more physical. Thought is the least physical, speech is a little bit more, and action is the most. Or the opposite. Action, speech, thought. The opposite. More physical to less physical.
What?
What action? No. The action is stop doing the sin. Start doing the mitzvah that you said that you didn't do. Right?
Put.
Oh, hold on. You remember too good. Because what's in your heart, right? It's not something necessarily that you say. Even if it's not feeling, it's intellect. One of the two. The heart is either intellect, and in many Rishonim, the lev is the seat of intellect, not emotion. Whatever it is, though, it's thought. Okay, so the Torah's order is first your speech, then your thought, then action. That doesn't seem to be the way that it works. People first think, then speak, then act. Even though many people don't think before they speak, but that's not the way it's supposed to be. Okay, so why does the Torah put it in that order? So I wanted to say the following. There's two kinds of thought, and that's what you're referring to. There's really two stages of thought. The first thought is really nebulous, not defined, clarified. It's like in the comic books, the light bulb lights up above the guy's head, right? He has this hashra'ah, this, what's the word in English for hashra'ah? Revelation. Right, exactly. It just hits you. It's not in words. It's just an idea, right? And that idea is very undefined. And if you leave it like that, it goes nowhere. What do you have to do? Articulate it. Speak it out. Right? What is it that I just hit me, right? And I just had this tremendous revelation, right? So then you speak it out. Right, either to yourself, to somebody else, right, and you define it, you clarify it, and it becomes then a clarified, a defined thought. Then that thought now is strong enough to bring you to do something about it. So the first thought is not really counted because it's useless. It just disappears if you don't carry it further. So in order to make that first eureka thought, right, into something that is effective, you have to articulate it first. So the first stage is really articulating the hashra'a, there's a word for it, I can't think of it, the revelation that you had. So first comes your mouth, then comes the real thought in your heart, and then once you articulate it and you have a real concrete thought, then you can act upon that thought and do it. That's the order, I think. If you think about it, that is the order of what's it called, the Yomim Tovim. Three Yomim Tovim follow this order. How so? Pesach, as its name implies in a euphemistic way, Pesach, mouth that speaks. And the truth is, that's what Pesach is mostly about. It's mostly about talking, right? Speaking, Yetzias Mitzrayim, and the Haggadah, and the Hallel, and so it's a mouth that speaks. Pesach, usually, what's it called, the main focus of Pesach is talk. Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, okay? Articulating what these ideas of Yiddishkeit are, articulating them, clarifying them, defining them, and making them crystal clear. The more you speak, the better it is, the more defined, the more things become. Then comes Shavuos. Shavuos, there's no special things to say, not from the Torah at least, okay? And there's nothing special to do. There's just Kabbalah Satorah. Kabbalah Satorah means that in your heart, you make up that you are going to accept the Torah. It's a totally thought process. Okay, what's in your heart, right? So therefore, on Pesach, I define my belief in God. On Shavuos, I say, well, if that's true, well, what is it supposed to bring me to, right? What am I supposed to now? How am I supposed to now act? Not act. How am I supposed to now commit myself and direct myself according to what now that I understand? So that's thought. And then Sukkos is action. Lulav and Esrog and Sukkah, it's all action. So that's the order. The order is start off with speaking, then it goes into your heart, and you're able to make the right decisions, right? And then put it into action. Okay. That also follows the following order, same kind of thing, Chochma, Bina, and Das. Chochma is articulating what's it called, the facts. Chochmah is knowing facts. In order to know them, like we said, you have to articulate them. You have to speak them out. You speak it out, right? You hear, you speak, you're able to define things and get the basic information. That's Pesach. Then comes the Bina. Bina is, okay, now that I have the facts, what do I do with them? How do I digest them? How do I integrate them? What am I supposed to do because of them? That's all mental process. That's Bina. Bina is Lahavin Dover Mitoch Dover, and that's in the heart. The same Belibeinu Lahavin. And then, once you know the facts, and you know what to do with them, then do it. That's Sukkos. That's what's it called. That's Das. Das means to connect yourself to the thing. To take what you know in theory and put it into practice. How do I know that? The Eitz Hadas was that, Eitz Hadas Tovara was what took the theory and put it into this physical world. Also, Das is a euphemism for husband-wife relations. It means to connect yourself to something, to cleave to something is called Das, is Deya. So, Chochmah is the facts. That usually comes from articulating them, speaking them out. Then there is the implication of those facts, that's in the heart, Bina. And then the realization of those facts and connecting it to action, to the physical world, to the the real world, but the physical world. Okay.
So you that, hold
from
Chabad.
Huh?
You hold from Chabad.
I hold from Chochma, Bina, and Das. They don't have a monopoly on those three things.
I have a question.
Yeah.
How do you relate that construct to the idea of Matan Torah being not the Nishma, and that the Nishma comes from the Nas, and you have to do it before you actually understand it on an integrated level?
Okay, because that Kabbalah Satorah, Matan Torah, was a second stage. Before we had Matan Torah, we had Yetzias Mitzrayim. Yetzias Mitzrayim was more to get the basics of Emunah. And in order to get that, like we said, Pesach is, we spoke, we discussed it between ourselves, right? Tell it to your children or whatever, what you saw, the experiences. It's an experiential thing. First, you have to have that foundation. You can't say Nasa V'Nishma unless you have first an understanding that there's a God and that he did something for you, and now he's expecting something from you. That's the second stage. At that second stage, you have to accept, before you understand, because I accept the fact that if God has the right to tell me, then I don't have to understand it first. I have to commit myself to it and hopefully try to understand as much as I can afterwards. But that's the second stage. That only came after Yetzias Mitzrayim. Didn't come before Yetzias Mitzrayim.
In a certain way, Yetzias Mitzrayim is
Right, but it's clear to mind is more tell it over to your children, discuss it between yourselves.
So
whatever.
You're talking about the Bina and Das?
Yeah, no, whatever. But what's it called? But the Yetzias Mitzrayim was more the Chochma. Kabbalah Satorah was more in the heart. Bina, Enochanai, Nasa, Venishma. And Das was putting into practice. That was Sukkos. Okay. Next. That's the next thing. Okay. Next, in Parshas Vayelech, Torah says like this, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu called Moshe and Yehoshua into Ohel Moed, and he did this in order to let the people know that Yehoshua already was taking over. This was the last day of Moshe's life. He didn't want people saying, Yehoshua couldn't, open his mouth when Moshe was around, now he becomes a big shot. So the Rabban Shalom wanted Yehoshua to already begin his reign over the Jewish people in Moshe's lifetime. And Moshe would put his hands on him like he did, and give over the mantle of leadership to Yehoshua in his lifetime. That's usually how leaders that pass on, authority to the next generation usually do that in such a way. Right? They don't wait till they die and then it passes on. They get the next one in line already into the job when they're alive, so people don't say couldn't do anything when the other one was alive. Okay. So the Rabban Shalom called Moshe and Yehoshua, and he called Yehoshua in privately and told him whatever he had to tell me, make him certain halachos, whatever it may be. And when Yehoshua came out, Moshe said to him, "What did God tell you?" And Yehoshua said, "Did you ever tell me what God said to you privately?" And Moshe said, "If that's the case, I can't take this anymore. God, I'm ready to go. Take me out of this world." Because Yehoshua did that, and he hurt Moshe Rabbeinu, he was punished. And they forgot 300 halachas during the time of Moshe Rabbeinu's, the mourning period for Moshe Rabbeinu, that had to then be recovered. Who recovered them was Osniel ben Kenaz with his pilpul. He brought them back. Okay, but that was the punishment. Now the obvious question is, here's Yehoshua, Moshe Rabbeinu's faithful student, right, protege, his whole life, lo yomosh mitocha ohel. He has the chutzpah to say this to Moshe Rabbeinu, to hurt him, and he's punished for it too. So it must have been something not nice. Why do you do it? So, let me tell you what I think, and then we'll have another question. Once we understand why he did it, then we have to understand why he was punished. He had a good... What? It's a medrash. It's a medrash. It could be a Gemara, too. The medrash amplifies it. The Gemara speaks about part of it, the 300 halachas or whatever, but the medrash amplifies it. I think even Rashi may bring it down there. I'm not sure, but it's a medrash. So, why? So I think the idea is like this. The Svarim say that it's very hard. A person gets used to this physical world, and leaving this world is very difficult. The more a person is involved with the world, the harder it is to leave. And the Rabbanu Shalom doesn't want that a person should his leaving this world be a tremendous pain and suffering to him. Especially people don't deserve that. So therefore there's a process, okay, of aging, of losing your faculties. And until a person comes to a point where he says, you know what, I had it. I don't mind if I've seen many people like that, old people that they just don't want to live anymore. And it's not that they want to commit suicide or whatever. They just, you know, I had it. I'm tired already. I can't see, you know, forgetting things and having to be taken care of by other people. Right? I was always the one who took care of others, and now I need people to take care of me. I don't want to be a burden on people. So it makes it easier to leave this world. It's a chesed that the Rabbanu Shalom does, right? The fact that people get older or whatever. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't have that. Because lo nos lecho, right? Moshe Rabbeinu was as fresh and young at 120 as he was earlier, right? So, on the other hand, Moshe Rabbeinu has to leave the world. And even a Moshe Rabbeinu, the Maisi, is in a physical world. It's not easy to leave. It says, Al korchach ata nolad, al korchach ata notzer, where we are conceived against our will, right? In the beginning, our neshamas are in Gan Eden, right? Under God's throne, whatever that means, in a spiritual world, get along very nicely over there. Everything is really nice. And then one day, a malach comes and says, time has come for you to go into the world down there, right? Look down there, you'll see this woman, what's it called, who is conceiving, and you're going into that blastula, that beginning two cells that have just been conceived. And the neshama says, you got to be out of your mind. I'm not going nowhere, right? Are you kidding? Right? I'm up here under God's throne. What in the world do I want to go into some woman's body down there? What's it called? The place of tumor, whatever. You know what? Leave me where I am. Right? Don't do me any favors. The malach said, we didn't ask you. I'm telling you a fact. This is where you're going. So the guy's neshama is forced into that developing embryo. And then, okay, so he gets used to 9 months inside the mother. Everything is fine, right? Nice and peaceful and quiet. And he gets his food easily without even having to open his mouth, right? Everything is really... He says, okay, you know what? Not so terrible being in this world, right? Just think I'll stick around for the next 70 years here inside my mother, and everything will be fine. The mother didn't ask her if she's interested in that, but in any case, so comes the malach and says, okay, next stage, you're going to be born. You're going out into the world out there. He said, nah, I think I'm very happy over here. Just leave me here, and 70 years, take me out of here, and I'm happy where I am. The malach said, I didn't ask you. That's the fact. So the person's born against his will. Okay. And then you live against your will too, to a certain degree. You have no choice. You can't end your life halachically, right? So what's it called? I'm not interested sometimes in going on, but I have no choice. So you live against your will. And then, after 120 years, the malach comes back, and he says, okay, you're going back. Going back to where we started. Back up there, whatever. The situation's different because you did mitzvahs or whatever, but we're going back. The guy says, you know what? I think I got used to this place. Maybe next year, give me another 20 years, whatever. I'm not really interested in going back right now. The malach says, I didn't ask you. I'm telling you. And that's it. And then you get back there, and you find out you can't just go back under God's throne. All of a sudden, you're called for an audience with the king, right? He wants to have an accounting of what you did down here. You say, I'm not really interested in giving you an accounting. Just put me back where I was or whatever. The malach said, I'm sorry, but it's not your choice. This is what you have to do. Everything is against your will. Okay. So they asked, the Vilna Gaon says, if everything is against your will, then why are you responsible to give an accounting to God? I didn't ask for this. I didn't ask to be put in the world. I didn't ask to, what's it called, to live, to be born, right? Why not give an accounting? It was all forced on me. Wasn't with my volition. So the only Gaon says an interesting thing. He says there's a Gemara that says the following. If I have a field that is, bordered by somebody else's field all around. He owns the outer field and I own the inner field. And this guy decides he wants to put up a fence around his field. Okay? So he puts it around the outer borders and the inner borders of the field. So he's basically fencing in my field. So if he does it from three sides, right, and he doesn't fence in the fourth side between me and him, he just wants to fence in the three sides, so I really didn't benefit because the fourth side's open. I don't have to pay him a penny. You wanted to do it, you didn't ask me, right? You wanted to fence in your field, fine. You pay for it, even though I benefited from it. Tough luck, I didn't ask for it. But if I go and say, look, I have three ready-made walls. All I have to do is put up a fourth wall. My whole field is fenced in. So I go up and put up a fourth wall. Then I have to pay half for all the other walls too. Why? Because I show that I'm happy with what he did. I want to be a partner, right? Otherwise, because I made use of his three walls. You made use of it, already pay for it. It's the same thing over here. The Vilna Gaon says, yeah, you are conceived against your will. And you are born against your will. And you you live against your will. Fine. If that would be the end of it, then maybe you wouldn't have to give an accounting. But when it comes time to leave here, most people say, you know what, have another year, another 2 years, I'm not interested in leaving. Right? At that point, you show that everything else you're happy with. You're happy to be conceived and born. So fine, now you have to give an accounting to God. According to this, if they commit suicide, they shouldn't have to give an accounting because they showed that they weren't interested. Okay, but in any case, the real answer, the real, what's it called? Somebody asked me recently, had a teenager that said to them, you know, why do I have to keep all these mitzvahs? I didn't ask to be Jewish. It was foreshadowed. I happened to be born Jewish. I was born Catholic. I have to do what they do. Right? So it's an accident of birth. Why do I have to do it? I didn't ask for this. So I told him to tell his child, the teenager, the following. I said, first of all, he should know that this is not his problem. The problem is not this deep philosophical question. He probably has a girlfriend or something like that, and that's why, you know, he's not interested too much in keeping mitzvahs. But he needs an excuse, so he's all of a sudden become a big philosopher and decided that, you know. So you're not going to answer the question. You're not going to really deal with the question this way. That's my experience. Right? All these 16, 17-year-olds will become deep philosophers, and these existential questions really bother them, and that's why they're going off the derech. It's usually, they saw that cheeseburger, it looks really good, or whatever. Usually it's not cheeseburgers. But in any case, but I told him, you know what you can tell your son? Tell him the following. I said, you know, you didn't choose to be a human being either, right? For that matter, you could have been born a dog, but God made you a human being. You also didn't choose to be a man, right? It's an accident. You could have been a woman too. So if that's the case, then take it to its, right, get down on all fours, right, and start barking. Because since you didn't show, who said you have to act like a human being? Right? You could have been a dog. So are you going to act like a dog? You could have been a woman, so start putting on dresses or whatever, because why should I be responsible to act like a man if I didn't ask to be a man? The answer is that free choice does not mean that it's a free-for-all, that you can choose whatever you want. It's not true, because there's certain parameters, certain givens that you don't choose, that are foisted on you. So he said, I believe in God, but I don't know why I have to keep mitzvahs since I didn't ask for this. I said, fine, if you believe in God, that means you believe that God made you a human being and a male, right? So you have to function as a human being and as a male, whether you like it or not. So he also made you a Jew. So you have to function as a Jew, whether you like it or not. Free choice starts after God gives you the framework. Once you have the framework, within that you have free choice to a certain degree. Free choice doesn't mean you can choose the framework. So if you believe in God and he gave you the framework, that's it. You have no choice in that. So you can't say, well, I didn't ask for this. Fine, you didn't ask for a lot of things. But you were given that responsibility. You have to function. If you don't, then you don't have to function like a human being. You don't function like a male or a female or whatever, and that's absurd. So the same thing goes for functioning like a Jew. That's, in any case, so therefore, that's the real answer. That even though it's against your will, but God is God. And he gives you, he created you, and he gives you circumstance, he gives you free choice to in a certain degree, but he doesn't give you free choice of everything. In any case, so therefore, getting off the topic a little bit, therefore, the Ribbono Shel Olam decides that he is going to make it easier for people to leave this world. It's a chesed, that you've been here a long time, don't feel so bad to be drawn away from the world. So by normal people, they get old, they get decrepit, they get dependent, and they just feel that, you know, I'm not so sad to leave. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't have that. So the Ribbono Shel Olam said, you know what, I want Moshe Rabbeinu also to feel like, you know, it's time. So I'm going to call Yehoshua separately, and I'm going to speak to him and not tell Moshe Rabbeinu when I'm speaking to him. And Moshe is going to say, you know, I see already, I can't live like this, right? God is talking to somebody else. I don't even know what's going on, right? I really feel like a fifth wheel. So it'll be easier for Moshe to leave the world. Okay. So Yehoshua understood that. Why is God doing this to Moshe Rabbeinu? Right? To make it easier for him to leave this world. So Yehoshua said, you know what? I'll help him out. So when Moshe asked him, and so what did God say? Yehoshua said, you ever tell me? Right? And I tell you. Now Moshe is really going to feel terrible. And so I'm accomplishing what God wants to accomplish. So if that's the case, why was he punished? Good, tremendous, good thing. There's a similar incident in Tanakh. Penina and Chana. Chana had never children. Penina had seven children. And Penina was afraid that Chana didn't have children because she didn't daven with enough kavana. And if she would daven with more kavana, God would listen to her and give her children. So, in order to assure that Chana would daven with kavana, Penina tormented her in the following way. Whenever she would buy cute little suits for her children or little dresses, she would look at Chana and say, what do you think about this suit or this little dress? If you had children, would you put this on your children? You know what kind of daggers that was in the heart of Chana? So Chana used to go and burst out crying and beg the Ribbono Shel Olam, what's it called? Please, Ribbono Shel Olam, give me children. I can't take this. And Penina was L'Shem Shamayim, this guy. She meant 100% L'Shem Shamayim. She wanted Chana to daven. But L'Shem Shamayim, you don't hurt somebody. And therefore she was punished. Eventually her children died.
What did she say?
She said to her, if you had kids, would you like this in, outfit for your kid or whatever? And made her feel like it's just what's it called, intensified her feeling of loss, of not having that, those children. What? Children in the end died, yeah. But why the children die is a separate story.
That's
a good question, but it's not for them. The children died for their reason. Why they had to be brought into this world for a certain amount of time, that was the children's chesed. Why this mother had to have those children was partially because of this reason. So Ribbono Shel Olam fits things together, that this fits this reason, this fits other reasons or whatever. They didn't die because of what Penina did. Nobody suffers for somebody else's sins. In any case, so whatever. The point.
That means the children who suffer suffer because
Of their own. Right. Whatever. Yeah. That's the easiest way of understanding. There could be other reasons. Could be Google. Could be other reasons. Could be a million reasons that we don't know. But that's one possibility. It's not the only possibility. In any case, so the point I want to bring out is not that. The point I want to bring out is only God can make somebody suffer for their good in the end. God can do that. Human beings can't do that. I can't say, you know what, I think a little suffering for you will be great for you in the end, so I'll make you suffer. Right? Unless you're God, you can't do that. And I'll explain to you why I think at least. God is beyond time. So therefore, if I'm making you suffer for a future good, it's not future, it's present. By God, the suffering and the whatever, even though in your realm it's separated from God's realm, it's not separated. It's all the present. A human being is governed by time. I can't make you suffer now for something that's going to be in the future because right now it's suffering. What's going to be in the future is the future for me. It's not here. So I can't make you suffer now for a future benefit because who said, first of all, the future will ever come? And secondly, I have to deal with things as they are now, not what they'll be in the future. So therefore, even though Penina meant L'shem Shemayim, and in the end, Chana's tefillos were answered, she got, you don't make people suffer because you think it's going to be good for them in the end. You don't have right to do such a thing. And she, because of that, she got punished, even though her intention was good. Good intentions don't make everything okay. Okay? Because if they did, you know, as they say, the road to Gehenna is paved with good intentions. The same thing with Moshe Rabbeinu. Yoshua felt, if God is doing this, then I'm going to help him. And if he's making Moshe Rabbeinu feel uncomfortable in this world, I'm going to make him feel even more uncomfortable. And I'm doing it l'shem Shemayim, because I see I'm taking the cue from God. Why did the Rabbi Moshe call me and not speak to Moshe Rabbeinu? Because he wants him to feel uncomfortable. If that's the case, I'll make him feel more uncomfortable. The Rabbi Moshe said, I can do that. You can't do that. And because of that, he, what's it called, they forgot all these halachas. Okay, let's go to another point, because I really want to finish at least one more point. Because the next thing is very important. Very important, Svarno. It's as a preface to Yom Noraim. Next week, we're not going to be here. Hopefully, we'll be in shul. Right? Praying for our lives, mamish. So, the Torah says like this. God's going to bring all these terrible calamities as a punishment and as a wake-up call that we should realize we have to do tshuva. And then, what's it called? We will wake up and we'll make the following statement. Al ein eloka bikirbi mitzauni haros ha'ilu. You'll see all these calamities, all these terrible things, and you'll stop attributing them to social, political, economic, coincidence, happenstance, but you'll say, you know what? You know why all these calamities, why these tsaros are happening? Because God abandoned me. God went away. God is not with me. And that's why I have these tsaros. Sounds really frum. Here's a person who recognizes that his tsaros are coming from God. They are not coincidental. They're not political, social, whatever. They are the act of God. That's a pretty high madrega, right, for a person to admit that. So you would think, okay, this now starts the process of redemption and tshuva. Now we got started on the corrective measures for why the Rabban Hashem brought all these tzaros to Klal Yisrael. Why he put us into Golus and all these tzaros. We finally came to the realization, Al ki ein elokai bekirbi mitzauni haro sa'ilu. Next pasuk says, the anochi haster astir ponai mehem. I will doubly hide my face from you. According to most opinions, this is a negative thing. If I hid my face till now, I'm going to doubly hide my face from you. Now, they ask, if the guy already admits that the tzaros are coming, right? Claudius already comes to the level. They admit that the tzaros are coming because God isn't with them. Why in the world should that generate more punishment? If anything, right, God should say, okay, you're on the road. Let's take it from here. Okay. So there are opinions that say, no, this is not a good thing. Haster, haster means I will hide my hiding, which means a double negative means I will start to uncover my face. But the simple meaning is not like that. It says the Svarno, why is this a terrible thing? Because that's not what's happening. God didn't abandon you. God never abandons you. He's always there. You abandoned him. You turned your face away from him. You built mechitzas between you and him. He didn't go anywhere. He's always there with you. The Rabban Hashem never leaves a person. But you turn your back on him. You create mechitzas between you and him for your sins. You're the problem, not God. What difference does it make? Ramayisa, in the end, right, God's not with me. That's why the tzaros happen. The difference is like this. If I abandon God through my sins, then the ball is in my court. And I have to come back. So I'll daven, I'll do tshuva, whatever. But if I think that God abandoned me, then the ball's in his court. Okay, come back. I mean, what did I do? You left me. You want to come back? Come back. So there's nothing I can do. God has to take the initiative. And that is a terrible thing. To think that there's nothing you can do. The ball's in your court. You're the problem. Not God's not the problem. He didn't abandon you. You abandoned him. And if you think he abandoned you, then you're putting the onus of coming back on him. You are the one who has to come back. He's there. You're the one who has to turn around. break down the mechitzas. So that's why the Rebbe Shem says, because of that, I'm going to doubly hide my face. And then you're going to have to seek me and realize it can't be that I'm not there because you couldn't exist. It must be that I'm there, but I'm just hiding my face. Hester Panim. It's not that God abandoned us. It's just that he's hidden, but he's there. He never leaves. You cause a situation where you don't see him. And therefore, now change the situation so you will see him. You have to access the Rebbe Shem. He's there. He's accessible. You just have to access him. He's not somewhere else, and therefore, what can I do? God doesn't want to come back. What can I do? That's not a positive way of coming to rectify the tzoras, right? Because realizing that you're to blame. If you blame God, not blame him, but you say that because of my sins, God left me, then fine, then God has to come back. But if because of my sins, I left God, then fine, then do something to come back. That's the idea. That's what the Sfarno says. Yeah. I can ask four questions, but only answer three. Yeah.
Four questions. But first thing on this, like, so against the shot, it's not like Hashem says, I will cause you not to see me if you do that. It's like it's Mamash not shot. That's the first question.
No, because it says Hester Panim. Hester Panim means Astir Panai. I will hide my face. That doesn't mean, you know, it's Lahavda, like the Wizard of Oz. Right? He's there just hiding his face. He's not going somewhere else, right? The guy is there. Just you don't see him. Okay, yeah?
The second question is, when you spoke about not hurting somebody that's present because of the future, how do you integrate that with chinuch and parenting, in which basically a lot of that is, I'm going to do something, I'm going to give you a consequence today so that you won't make that mistake tomorrow and have a good life?
At least it's a good question. That's good. That's good.
Another question is, give me one reason besides Gilgulim that you can explain why your children
suffer. Okay. The question you asked with chinuch or whatever is a good question. L'chora, we do that. We spank a kid because we don't want him to run the road again and get hit by a car. So I'm hurting him now, but I'm not hurting him. That's a pshat. I'm not doing it to hurt him, but that hurt is going to cause, like the Moshe Rabbeinu, doing it to hurt him, but I'm hurting him because that hurt is going to make it easier for him to leave the world. Over here, it's a process of chinuch. So the hitting, the whatever, is not to hurt. I'm not doing that to hurt you. I'm doing it to direct you and guide. If I'm doing it to hurt you, it's wrong. If I'm doing it because you need that incentive, right now, it's not. No, there also, it was to hurt her. Except that hurt hopefully would come to something else. Over here, you don't have kavana to hurt your child. I don't want to hurt him. I want to be mechanech him. Completely different thing. You have kavana to hurt your child because that'll help him later on, right? Kid needs to be, you know, tortured a little bit because later on he'll you know, feel that he has a better life because it'll be, right, if anything's better than what I went through when I was a kid, that's wrong. That's not the same thing. Last thing is, it says David HaMelech was supposed to live for 1 second. And other Marishi gave him 70 lives, years of his life. That means it's possible there are neshamas that are put into this world to exist for 1 second. To be stillborn even. Okay, why? I don't know. God has a plan.
I'm talking about suffering.
Yeah, 1 second. No, even. And the way that the person has to leave the world is this and this way. That neshama was created to fulfill a certain purpose in this world, not a punishment. That is part of the big machine, part of the big puzzle. This piece needs to come into the world and to suffer and leave, and that is part of the scheme of eternity. Why? I don't know. But I do know that it's possible that a person could be created to live 1 second and to die in a second. So what was the purpose of that? Why are you coming to this world for 1 second? Right. So I'm saying that you could be coming to the world for a second, or you can come to the world for 100 seconds and leave Dafka in a suffering way, and that is part of God's plan, why that's necessary for the totality of perfection of the world. Why? I can't explain it.